Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Is Trump looking for an off-ramp from the war? Any answer is correct. U.S. intelligence contradicts Trump's war rationale and fallout from the postponed U.S.-China summit. First, is Trump looking for an off-ramp from the war? Based upon what President Trump is saying and doing lately, the answer is yes and no. Consider what he said in a social media post last week. We are getting very close to meeting our objectives as we consider winding down our great military efforts in the Middle East. That's hardly a commitment to exiting, but it was enough to generate speculation that Trump was finally ready to declare victory and withdraw. The serious damage to Middle East allies by Iranian retaliation, the increasing U.S. casualties, the fast-rising U.S. gas prices, and the failure to open up the Strait of Hormuz, all these developments fly in the face of Trump's expectation of an easy win. But facts don't often move Trump. He probably also considers that he hasn't achieved any of his ever-shifting objectives. Regime change in Iran, its leadership's unconditional surrender, the total elimination of its nuclear capability, and Iran's support of terrorism. In the face of these conflicting circumstances, Trump seems to be burning the candle at both ends. To sustain his war policy, he ordered another 4,500 Marines to the Middle East and threatened to obliterate Iran's power grid, starting with the biggest one first, he said, if it doesn't open the strait. The biggest facility is a nuclear power plant. Destroying it might cause an environmental catastrophe. It probably would also be a war crime. Iran responded immediately to that threat, with one official saying Iran would, quote, irreversibly destroy energy facilities in the region if the U.S. attacked its power plants, and another official warned that Iran would completely close the Strait of Hormuz. Meantime, Iran's missiles have struck two cities close to Israel's nuclear weapon base in the Negev Desert. Then on Monday, Trump withdrew the threat to the power grid. In a social media post, he cited, quote, very good and productive conversations regarding a complete and total resolution of our hostilities in the Middle East. Based on the tenor and tone of these in-depth, detailed, and constructive conversations, which will continue throughout the week, he postponed any and all military strikes against Iranian power plants and energy infrastructure for 5 days, claiming there were, quote, major points of agreement with Iran. Pressed for details, Trump said he has sent Iran a 15-point plan and that Iran has agreed not to have a nuclear weapon or engage in any form of uranium enrichment. That is surely not true. Iran says this is all fake news. Iran is not denying that exchanges with the U.S. are taking place through various Middle East intermediaries, but its foreign ministry said Trump's real intention is to, quote, reduce energy prices and buy time for implementing his war plans. The minister may be right. Oil prices did come down, though only to $100 a barrel, and those 5 days are just enough for the stock market to rally. Playing the market is just what one would expect from Trump and his two envoys, Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff, both of whom have major investments in the Middle East. Israel's objectives in the war are not the same as Trump's. The Netanyahu government has made clear that it is determined to eliminate Iran's leadership and its nuclear capability, no matter what the Americans decide. Israel has not stopped military operations in Iran or Lebanon. The peace that Trump's plan was supposed to bring to Israel with Hamas's defeat is gone, replaced by rampant settler violence in the West Bank. Will Trump leave the battlefield to Israel in any agreement with Iran? That would surely anger the Saudis, Qataris, and the Emirates, and provide fertile new ground for Hamas and Hezbollah to recruit for a new round of warfare. And then there are the U.S. allies on whom Trump did not think he had to rely. But with the Strait of Hormuz effectively blocked, he's forced to demand that NATO reopen the strait. So far, he's gotten nowhere. Italy, Germany, and France have indicated that they will help ensure safe passage in the strait only after a ceasefire. Trump is having to resort to steps that don't come close to easing the energy situation, such as removing sanctions on Russian and Iranian oil shipments at sea, a bizarre case of enriching one's adversaries in wartime. The bottom line, Trump has made war over matters that were settled in peacetime, a strait open to all international traffic, an Iran that was nowhere near having a nuclear bomb, and thousands of people who would otherwise be alive. Only personal pique and Israeli pressure can explain his decision to attack Iran. And on the subject of an Iranian nuclear weapon, the next story, U.S. intelligence contradicts Trump's war rationale. Top U.S. intelligence officials directly contradicted one of the Trump administration's justifications for going to war, repeating the intelligence community's conclusion that Iran was years away from developing missiles capable of hitting the U.S. In testimony before a Senate committee, Tulsi Gabbard affirmed the conclusion reached by the Trump administration's Defense Intelligence Agency last year that it would be a decade before Iran could get past the technological hurdles to produce weapons capable of reaching the United States. Likewise, CIA Director John Ratcliffe did not give a timeline when asked whether Iran would have been able to strike the United States within 6 months. Instead, focusing on its ability to reach as far as Europe and threaten U.S. bases and interests in the region. Nevertheless, Trump continues to lie about Iran's capabilities, claiming, for example, in his State of the Union address, that Iran was, quote, working to build missiles that will soon reach the U.S. of A. That claim goes along with his insistence that Iran was only 2 weeks away from having a nuclear weapon when the U.S. struck Iran. Fallout from the postponed U.S.-China summit. A consensus among China watchers seems to be that China will be the beneficiary of Trump's postponement of the summit that had been scheduled for March 30 through April 2. Trump was already weakened by the Supreme Court's invalidation of his tariffs. The Iran war's length and absence of a clear success only add to Trump's problems. When a summit will take place is uncertain, but even when it was scheduled, the agenda had not been set and other details remained undetermined. Wu Xinbo, a senior China watcher with Fudan University in Shanghai, thinks that, quote, delaying the visit a bit would give both sides more time to negotiate and prepare, which could lead to a better outcome for the visit. But Trump's agenda is already full with the Iran war, Cuba, and relations with Israel. It could be some time before a U.S.-China summit is again being planned. In other news, Hungary's dispute with Ukraine may be settled. Hungary's Viktor Orbán had contended that until Ukraine reopened a pipeline that carries Russian oil through Ukraine to Hungary, he would block the $104 billion European Union aid package to Ukraine. Orbán had accused President Zelensky of Ukraine of refusing to repair the pipeline in order to help Orbán's opponent in upcoming elections. The election will apparently be so tight that Vice President Vance is being sent to Hungary in support of Orbán. Now the EU has stepped in, offering to finance the pipeline's repair if Orbán will vote to approve the aid to Ukraine. If Orbán is true to his promise, the EU offer will finally enable passage of the aid package. Cuba's president vows resistance to an attempt at a U.S. takeover. On March 18, Trump told reporters, quote, we'll be doing something with Cuba very soon. Whether I free it, take it, I think I could do anything I want with it. Those comments led Cuba's president, Miguel Díaz-Canel, to say Cuba will resist any U.S. attempt to take over the island. In the face of the worst scenario, Cuba is accompanied by a certainty. Any external aggressor will clash with an impregnable resistance, Díaz-Canel said. The Trump regime clearly isn't satisfied with the economic changes promised by Cuba, such as allowing Cuban exiles to invest in the island. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said, quote, Cuba has an economy that doesn't work and a political and governmental system that can't fix it. So they have to change dramatically. What they announced is not dramatic enough. It's not going to fix it. So they've got some big decisions to make over there. What Rubio is really saying is that nothing short of regime change will satisfy the U.S. And the U.S. is going after Colombia's president. The Trump administration has used drug trafficking charges to justify ousting Nicolas Maduro and bring charges against Cuban officials. Now they're doing the same thing with Colombia's president Gustavo Petro, accusing him of involvement in the cocaine trade. Trump has had an on-again, off-again relationship with Petro, on one hand engaging in angry exchanges over Maduro's kidnapping and U.S. gunboat diplomacy, and on the other having a cordial meeting in the White House. There is no mystery about this latest prosecutorial attempt. The aim is to remove another thorn in Trump's side. Petro's term in office ends in May, and replace him with a leader who will kowtow to Trump. It is Trump's preferred alternative to outright regime change, but in effect, the strategy amounts to the same thing. Next, Middle East countries and movements face difficult choices during Trump's war. Iran and Qatar accused Israel of attacking South Pars, the Iranian part of a giant offshore natural gas field that the two countries share. Gas exports are a critical part of Qatar's economy. Oil and natural gas prices are soaring as Israeli and Iranian attacks on energy facilities continue. President Trump said the United States and Qatar were not involved in the attacks, but The Guardian interviewed three Israeli officials who said the U.S. helped coordinate them. Trump has threatened to destroy Iran's portion of the gas field, vowing in a social media post that, quote, no more attacks will be made by Israel on South Pars unless Iran attacked Qatar's energy facilities. If that happened, he said, the U.S. would massively blow up the oil field. The Saudis, meantime, seem to be losing patience with the war as Iran's missiles have hit their country. The Saudi foreign minister said the 2023 accord that China brokered between Saudi Arabia and Iran had been, quote, completely shattered. But does that mean that the Saudis will act on their own, as the minister implied on March 19 when he said, we will not shy away from protecting our country and our economic resources? Evidently not. The Times is reporting that, quote, in a series of conversations over the last week, Prince Mohammed bin Salman has conveyed to Mr. Trump that he must press toward the destruction of Iran's hardline government, arguing that the U.S. attacks are a, quote, historic opportunity to get rid of a major threat to the Persian Gulf. That view contrasts directly with Saudi Arabia's public statements that it wants a peaceful resolution to the conflict as soon as possible. Hamas is said to be in a quandary as Iran, its principal arms supporter, sends missiles into Qatar, Hamas's main economic support. Hamas has straddled the fence, announcing support for Iranian resistance to the U.S., while also indicating concern about Qatar's security. Hezbollah's alliance with Iran is costing its support in Lebanon, as Israel continues air and ground operations in areas once left untouched. The Lebanese government and many people there blame Hezbollah for the destruction it has attracted from Israel. Israel is taking full advantage, with the far right envisioning an expansion of Israel's border with Lebanon and settlement of Israelis there. Finally, Denmark faces a national election with national security first in mind. Danes will be going to the polls with a new perspective on politics, one in which domestic security is national security. As writers for Bloomberg report, quote, the highly unusual nature of the March 24 ballot is one in which security and Denmark's place in an increasingly unstable world have risen to the top of voter concerns over staples like jobs, health, or the economy. The new reality is causing a reassessment of long-standing policies, including Denmark's lukewarm relations with the European Union, to huddle closer to the bloc, and a reappraisal of the country's energy mix in a bid to become more self-reliant, unquote. Russian aggressiveness, Chinese assertiveness, and especially Trump's Greenland threats are mainly responsible for this shift. It finds expression in a greatly increased military budget, larger contributions to NATO, and closer nuclear cooperation with France for deterrence. That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.